Well, last week we studied the covenant that God made with Adam. And this was a permanent covenant. It was a covenant of fellowship, and it was put in place at the creation. God placed Adam in the garden and gave him responsibilities to care for it and to keep it. He provided Adam with a wonderful helpmate and Eve to assist in carrying out his duties. And together they were one with God. They enjoyed a unique fellowship. That is, until something happened. Until the tempter came. And God only had one request, and that was not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It was a negative command. And Adam, as head of the human race, failed the test. And their failure did not result in immediate physical death, but eventually it did. It brought spiritual death and eventually physical death, as evidenced by the fact that they hid themselves from and realized they hid themselves from God and realized that they were naked. So God addressed each one of them for their role in their rebellion against Him. Even though God rightfully judged them for their sin, He also demonstrated His grace and compassion. Adam was still expected to carry on his duties in the garden, to work the ground, to care for it. And he allowed them to live and to carry on and to have children so that the human race could continue. And so this continuation of the race, I want to demonstrate and show how we're moving from Adam into Noah. And today we're going to discuss the Noahic covenant. So, the continuation of the human race is recorded in Genesis 4, 5, and 6. And it takes us up to the event of the flood and into the Noahic covenant as it's recorded in chapter 9. So, this morning we're going to be spending our time in these chapters as we continue our covenant series. So, as you can see on the screen, I put together a little visual aid to help us kind of walk through this process. And what this does, it kind of sets the tone or sets the environment for how the Noahic covenant is set in. Now, as you can see, the very top area up here, it's Adam and Eve. And you can see that little branch there that represents the garden. And so here they are in the garden, and the two red arrows that are pointing downward represents the fall. All right? So we have Adam and Eve in the garden. We have the fall. And then they had two kids, and obviously a third one later, which is Seth. They had Cain and Abel, and they had Seth. And I want to talk about this briefly here. Now, God said, in order to approach God, what they had to do, what God required, was that they had to make an offering. They had to sacrifice an animal. It was blood. Hebrew tells us that without the shedding of blood, there's no remission of sins. And so, as early as in the garden, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, God required the shedding of blood in order to approach God or in order to worship God. And that was His prescription. And so, Abel followed what God had asked him to do. He presented an offering. Cain did not. And so God had disregard for Cain's offering, and he accepted Abel's offering because God has a certain way, or at least at that time, a certain prescribed way of how to approach God, and that was through sacrifice. And so jealousy and anger began to boil up in the heart of Cain. And you could call it the sin monster, the fallen part of man, the corrupted part of man began to dwell up within Cain, and its anger and jealousy. And so God tried to warn Cain about not acting on that, and he said, you must master it. He basically said in Genesis, he said that it is crouching at the door, it desires to have you must master it. So Cain had the ability to choose what was right, and he didn't. Instead, he went out and he murdered his brother. And so as punishment, God assigned him to a life of cropless soil and wandering. And after complaining that the punishment was too severe, God graciously put a mark on him to prevent others from taking Cain's life. That's another sign of God's grace. Abel, as you can see, he doesn't have any descendants because his brother took his life. And then if you go over to the right, we have Seth and the lineage of Seth, the genealogy of Seth. So on the left we have Cain and his genealogy, and to the far right we have Seth and his genealogy. So under Cain, we have Cain as offering, and then he had a son named Enoch. We have Irad, Mahujael, Methusiel, and a guy by the name of Lamech. And Lamech had two wives, Ada and Zillah, and then they had corresponding children as well. Now, you can see that under Lamech, there's a little knife listed there. That means he did something that was really bad, something violent. And in Genesis 4:23, it records his confession. He says, "For I have killed a man for wounding me, and a boy for striking me. If Cain is avenged sevenfold, then Lamech 77-fold." If you look over on the right, we'll see the lineage of Seth. And you could call this more of a godly lineage, because if you look at some of the references down here, some of them, you know, they, like Enoch was someone who called on the Lord. Enoch walked with God. Methuselah, I'm going to kind of explain what some of these mean, but there's a difference in the type of genealogy between Cain and Abel. If you look at Enoch, Seth had a child named Enosh, and after Enosh, if you drop down to Enoch was a man who said he walked with God. So after Enoch became the father of Methuselah, you drop down here, after Enoch became the father of Methuselah, he walked with God for 300 years, and then God took him without having to experience physical death. Now, he and Elijah are the only two people, you know, in the Bible that did not have to go through, did not die physically. God just took them right up to heaven. Methuselah, the name actually means man of dart or man of the javelin. And his name, this implied the fact that he sent forth a warning to the godless world during which a time of... He sent forth a warning to the people of the forthcoming judgment of the flood. So after Enoch gave... Apparently God gave some type of a special revelation to Enoch about his son, that his son would send forth some type of a special message to the world at that time about the impending, the forthcoming flood. And that's kind of what that represents there. One of the precept commentaries suggested that his name actually means when he is old or when he is dead, it will come. So shortly before or after his son was born, God may have given, again, Enoch some special insight about the coming flood, and that his son would reflect this special calling in life. Lamech was... Notice that there's another individual that was born after Methuselah. His name was Lamech. And there's two Lamechs in each of the different genealogy lines. One on the left was a man who murdered another person and a son. And the one on the right was the father of Noah, and he had a son named Noah who eventually, he was a man who walked with God and obeyed God, and God found favor in his eyes, and he saved the human race from destruction. So if you compare these two individuals, one came from the godly lineage and one from the ungodly. And then, of course, we have Noah. He could basically be considered a contemporary of Methuselah. So after Noah was 500 years old, he had three sons that were born to him: Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And we're going to look at that in just a little bit. Notice the little binoculars under Ham's name. You know what that's for? What are binoculars used for? Looking, seeing things. What did he see? What did Ham see after the flood, remember? His father's nakedness. So that's what that represents. That's Ham. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay, now let's continue. What I want to do is spend a little bit of time in Genesis chapter 6. Beginning at verse 5. Now things have changed a lot since the fall. And that's kind of what we're going to get into. That's what this middle section kind of demonstrates, is the escalation of sin. That's just the big thing here that's going on. And as sin escalated, it things really kind of got out of hand. You could say it kind of exploded exponentially to the point where wickedness and violence filled the earth. Now, verses 1 through 4 of chapter 6 describe the sons of God and the Nephilim as entities that had wrongful sexual relations with women. And that was one of the many things, issues that were going on. You could basically say that everything was pretty much out of control. Now, let's look at God's reaction beginning in verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent, which means every inclination or every plan of the thoughts of his heart, was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from a man to animals, to creeping things, and to the birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them. So God's heart was grieved. His heart was grieved when he saw how evil man had become. The people whom he had created in his image was so distorted from his original design. And it was twisted from sin, due to sin, to the point that it prompted him to say, I am sorry that I have made man. That's kind of a sad commentary. God was sorry and grieved in his heart that he created man. And, you know, as parents, one of the things that Melanie and I have tried to do since the kids were very young was to teach them the importance of obedience or respect for us, for its parents, and for those in authority. And we used to draw a circle and a fridge, and we wrote Ephesians 6:1 in it, which says that children tell the children to respect, obey their parents, for this is pleasing, and there's a promise associated with it, so that things might go well with you. And so we would explain that if you don't respect things that we say or we ask you to do, you're actually going outside of the circle, and you're getting into some dangerous waters, because outside the circle, it can be dangerous when you try to move out and do your own thing. If you stay inside, which is the things that we ask you to do, there's protection, and there's protection there. And there's a promise that your things can go well. And so that's one of the things that we try to do. And I think they pretty much understand that. And they realize that by following what we ask them to do, they're actually obeying God and are honoring God at the same time, because that's what God asks us to do. So now, what happens if we're coming to church one morning and I ask Ryan or Sarah to say, hey, would you please help set up the chairs? And one of them would respond and say, no, I don't want to do that. I always got to do this. Why don't you have somebody else do it? You know, how would, let's say it's in shouting distance and everybody hears it and they're talking back with that type of attitude. Wouldn't you feel sad, kind of embarrassed for me a little bit, kind of grieved that, you know, our kids are responding that way? And that's kind of how God felt when his people that he created in his image, they just turned their back on them, and they're wicked and they're violent against against who he is and his ways. And that's kind of maybe what's happening here. So even though God was going to blot all man from the face of the earth, God did find someone who walked with God. And that man is Noah. If we drop down to verse 8, I want to read verses 8 through 10. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Favor means grace. He found grace or favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And so here we're introduced to Noah and to his sons. In contrast to the violence and the background of the violence and wickedness that was taking place at the world at that time, Noah found favor with God. Now, why did Noah find favor with God? What made him different? Well, verse 9 says that he was blameless. He was a man who walked with God. He followed God's ways. He followed his precepts. He understood that in order to approach God, it required an offering. He understood his position, his sin in relation to God, and he honored what God had, God's ways. And so he depended on God and how he lived. If you look at 2 Peter, Peter refers to Noah as a preacher of righteousness. He lived differently from those around him. He was a man who revered, had reverence for God. Hebrews 11:7 tells us something about Noah. It says that by faith, Noah, being warned by God about the things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. I was reading an article from Answers in Genesis, and they mentioned that Noah was the first evangelist mentioned in the Bible. I thought about that. That's true. You know, the fact, and Peter said again, he was a preacher of righteousness. And Noah's man, he didn't cave into the culture of the ancient world, but remained firm in what God had said and asked him to do. And so in doing that, he condemned the world. Now, the writer, as we go into verse 11 through 13, the writer turns our attention back to the earth and the situation of the earth. So he introduces it from verses 8 through 10. Then he tells us who Noah, introduces us to Noah. Now he's going to take us back to the situation with the earth and how bleak the situation was. 11 through 13. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. Then God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them, and behold, I am about to destroy them with the earth." Now, if you look at some of the vocabulary, the words that are repeated here in these verses, you'll see a couple things. One is that the word corrupt, or a form of the word is corrupted, is used three times in those three verses. Corrupted their way. And the phrase filled with violence is repeated twice in verse 11 and in verse 13. Now, what I'd like to have you do is think about this for a minute. Is our earth today filled with violence? Think about all the violence that it happens all the time. You just have to open up, read up, turn on the TV or look on your phone and check the internet. You hear stuff constantly, whether it's police related or violence in the streets or riots or protesting, murders, abductions. You can name it. It's there. And what about corruption? Have you ever seen any dishonesty in our elected officials? It's there. And Jesus summed up, this is kind of interesting, Jesus summed up the world of Noah when teaching about his second coming in Matthew 24. Maybe if you turn over to that passage of scripture, put your thumb where you're in Genesis. Matthew 24, 37 through 39. Beginning at verse 37, Jesus said, "For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man be." So, in other words, the people in Noah's day were just carrying out their everyday lives. They're doing the things that they wanted to do. And they're eating, they're drinking, they're doing their own thing. And they didn't understand what happened, or what was happening, until the moment that the flood came to take them away. And then it was too late. Now, what I'd like to have you do is take a peek, go back a little bit up to Genesis of chapter 3. I'm sorry, verse 3 of Genesis 6 here. Just move up a little bit in the chapter to verse 3. And God says something very significant here. And this was when the escalation of sin, and he had all the Nephilim and all the stuff that was going on. But verse 3, he says, "Then the Lord said, 'My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he is also flesh. Nevertheless, his days shall be 120 years. Now, the 120 years is a countdown to the flood. So it's God's judgment on man, and it's a countdown to the flood. So God had warned them 120 years prior to the flood that it was coming. So talk about the patience of God, the long-suffering God. He gave them 120 years. They didn't listen to Methuselah. They didn't listen to Noah during or before the construction of the ark. Now, AIG's Bodhi Hodge predicted that it probably took Noah about 55 to 75 years to build the ark, which would have given people plenty of time to repent and turn to God. And Peter speaks about how Christ, after his death, went and proclaimed to the spirits. He references the patience of God in the days of Noah during the construction of the ark. And that's found in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 20. The point is this, that God was patient, and he gave people at that time, before the flood came, an opportunity, many chances to repent. And so here we are. It's just kind of a gloomy scenario with all this. And the Noahic covenant is set in here. And this is where the Noahic covenant is set. So in verse 13, God announced that he was about to destroy the men of Noah's day. And then dropping back down to 17, he details how it's going to happen. If you look at verse 17, this is what God says. "Behold, I am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh, in which the breath of life from under heaven, everything that is on the earth shall perish." Then in verse 18, we see the word covenant appear. This is the first time that the word covenant appears in the Bible. And God makes a covenant with Noah. In verse 18, he says, "But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you." So Noah, Mrs. Japheth, Mrs. Ham, Mr. and Mrs. Japheth, and Mr. and Mrs. the other son, they all entered the ark. Now, if you remember from our introductory lesson, that the Old Testament word for covenant is berit, B-E-R-I-T. It refers to an agreement or a pact that is made between two parties by cutting animals. They'd half the animals, cut them in half, and then they would, the parties, the agreement, they would walk through the animals as a sign to solidify the covenant, confirm the covenant. So here God declares his covenant before the flood, which is in verse 18. He judges it through the flood, and then he establishes covenant with Noah after the flood in chapter 19. Chapter 9. And we'll be getting to that just shortly here. So I'm going to kind of summarize things a little bit here before as we get up to chapter 9. So including verse 18 that we just read, through chapter 7:24, God initiated a covenant with Noah, with his family, and with every living thing. The birds, the animals, and all the creepy, yucky things that crawl on the ground. He enters the ark with his family, along with all the clean and unclean animals, and he brings up the door, and the flood hits, and everything that was on the earth at that time is destroyed. It all died. And then look, in beginning at chapter 8, to look at chapter 8, verses 1 through 19, I'm going to just kind of summarize what happened there. The rain, it comes down, and the water lasted for 150 days. And then verse 1 of chapter 8 tells us that God did something significant, and that is that he remembered his covenant that he had made with Noah. And at that point, things began to change. The waters receded, the dry land began to appear, and the ark rested on Mount Ararat. And God then instructed Noah to come out of the ark, and he did. So along with all the birds and the creepy things, and he commanded them to be fruitful and to multiply. It's found in verse 17 of chapter 8. So in verse 20, Noah, this is what verse 20 says. It says, then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and he took on every clean animal and every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. So the first thing that Noah did when he came out of the ark is that he built an altar. Now, an altar, an altar is not used to grill burgers. It's used to sacrifice animals. And Noah understood that he was in covenant with God. He remembered his covenant that God made with him from verse 18. And so he used the altar to sacrifice animals. And he knew that the way to approach God was through sacrifice and the shedding of blood, which is probably handed down to him through the oral tradition from his ancestry that we saw in the lineage, that this is how you approach God, it's through sacrifice. And so that's what he does here. And this may have been the reason why God instructed Noah to take with him every clean animal by sevens, a male and female, and the unclean animals by two, so that Noah could make some sacrifices. Now let's look at how God responded in verses 21 and 22. The Lord smelled the soothing aroma, and the Lord said to himself, I will never again curse the ground on account of man, for the intent of man's heart is evil from his youth, and I will never again destroy every living thing as I have done. Well, the earth remains, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. So God smelled the sacrifice, the aroma, and it was pleasing to him. It kind of makes you think a little bit that, God could smell. I mean, God likes smell the sacrifices. God could see. I don't know exactly what the Hebrew meaning behind that is. If he just meant that he could see the sacrifice, or he could see the act of the worship of what it means that people are following him, or if he can literally smell the sacrifices. But at any rate, he smelled the sacrifice. He could see what was happening, and he smelled the sacrifices, and it was pleasing to him. And so he makes a promise. And in verse 18 of chapter 9:18, we have the establishment of the covenant. This is the Noah covenant. So chapter 9, verse, beginning at verse 8. Then God spoke to Noah and his sons with him, saying, Now, behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, of all that comes out of the ark, every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you, and all flesh shall never again be cut off by the water of the flood, neither shall there again be a flood to destroy the earth. So, the first thing that we see here, I'm just going to stop there for a minute. The first thing that we see here is a declaration. And a declaration is basically a statement about what God is going to do. He gives us his intention. And notice that the declarative statement that he makes. Verse 9 says, I myself, I establish, I am making. And so who is God, if we look at this, who is God establishing his covenant with? He's establishing his covenant with Noah and his descendants. Well, who are the descendants of Noah? We're all descendants of Noah. So, Ryan a descendant of Noah, Kimberly a descendant of Noah. We're all descendants of Noah because we all came from him after the flood. So that means that one of us, we either came from Shem, Ham, or Japheth. And we may have, I don't know which one exactly, but we may have come from Japheth from what I've read. And now, who else did God establish his covenant with? Was it just with Noah only? Was just with his descendants? This is one of the things that differentiates the Noahic covenant with some of the other covenants in terms of the scope of who this all applies to. He also made a covenant with the animals, with the rest of the earth, all living things, the birds, the cattle, every single beast on the earth. Every single animal and beast on the earth. So the covenant is broader than just Noah and his descendants. It's them and also the earth, because the earth was destroyed by water. And so the next thing that God does is he gives us a promise. There's a promise here. And the promise, well, let's look at the promise here. The promise does something. It answers the question of what the Noahic covenant is about. And God said, He will never again destroy the earth, destroy all flesh in the earth by water. And that is, in essence, what this covenant is. It's God's promise to never destroy the earth again, man or the earth again, with water. Now, we know that at some point in the future, the earth will be destroyed. It won't be destroyed with water, it'll be destroyed with fire. It'll be burned, earth and its work will be burned up. But you can take comfort, the next time you're in a major rainstorm and it seems like it's going to flood itself out, you'll be okay because the earth won't be destroyed with water. A big hurricane might hit sometime, but the earth itself will not ever again be destroyed with water. Okay, let's look at verses 12 through 17. And we're going to see a sign. And you know, a sign is something that we're all familiar with. A sign is a reminder. Every Sunday we come in here, one of us drags a sign out here to inform people, remind them that Renew has a starting time. We start at 10 o'clock, we have worship services, and we're located here to bring people in. We have a sign. And so God gives us a sign in the covenant here. Verse 12, God said, This is a sign of the covenant which I am making between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all successive generations. I set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. It shall come about when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow will be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And never again shall the water become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the cloud, then I will look upon it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is a sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. So, what was the sign that God had placed? The sign was a bow, and we all know that that is the rainbow. So the sign, again, was a reminder for God. Actually, the sign here, this is kind of interesting. It says the sign wasn't a reminder for Noah or for man. It was a reminder for God. So when God looked at the sign, he would remember never to destroy the earth again by the flood. That's one thing that differentiates this sign versus some of the other signs and the other covenants that are forthcoming. That God, it was for God to remember the remembrance for God to never destroy the earth again by the flood. And I guess that's probably good that the rainbow is in the cloud, because there's a lot of parallels between the world at that time and the world it is today. So God is very gracious and long-suffering. So in the summary, I just want to mention a couple things. One thing that stands out from our study this morning is just the depravity of man. If man left to our own natural inclinations and appetites, our behavior can get really, it can get ugly. It can get dangerous and even life-threatening. The world is on a collision course with destiny, and at some point, God's plan for the ages will take place and it will be destroyed. As I mentioned earlier, God said he would never destroy the world again with water, but he will at some point in the future destroy it by fire. And that's what Peter talks about in his letter in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Now, if you ask yourself, has the human race changed since then? In chapter 10, we see that the heart of man hasn't changed. They were instructed to be fruitful and to multiply. God gave them the command to be fruitful, to multiply, and to fill the earth in Genesis 9:1. Then we look in Genesis 10 and Genesis 11 with the building of the ark, or with the building of the Tower of Babel. And so God gives this command, and then we see with the tower that man said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to build a tower. I'm going to make a name for myself. I'm going to worship the heavens rather than the God of the heavens. So you see it happening right then and there. And God described the condition of the fallen heart of man through the prophet Jeremiah. He said through Jeremiah in chapter 17, verse 9, that the heart is deceitful, is more deceitful than all else and desperately sick. Who can understand it? And in Genesis, here in 6:5, he said, the very intent of the thoughts of his heart, of man's heart, is evil continually. So how do we move then from having a sick, unregenerate heart to having a heart that would want to listen and obey God? And that's what the new covenant is about. And we're going to be, I don't want to preempt our studies, but we're going to be talking about that. So that's something I'm excited to look forward to. You know, and as Christians, we all struggle against sin. We have a new heart. We have a heart that, because God created us, given us, and we're new creatures in Christ, He's given us a new heart. But we still struggle with sin. But God promises, He says that when we are tempted, that He provides an escape route for us. 1 Corinthians 10:13 tells us that. The other thing I want to mention is that God sees what's going on in the world today. And in spite of all the evil around us, and sometimes we get the false impression that says, you know, why didn't God do something? Or why do we, you know, why is this happening? Why didn't God do something? God sees what's going on. And we saw in through the verses, chapters you covered in Genesis, that He sees what went on. His heart was grieved. He sees what's taking place. At some point, He will do something about it. As I close, I want to give you a quote from Genesis, Answers in Genesis. I kind of mentioned this general idea, but it bears repeating. He said that just as most people today do not believe Jesus is coming back at all, let alone soon, the people of Noah's day did not know that the flood was going to happen. However, they were informed that it was going to happen. The fact that Noah was actually building an ark, God sent his warning. He gave him 120 years in advance that this was going to take place. And Noah himself was a preacher of righteousness. They could tell by how he lived and things he did in obedience to the Lord that this something was going to take place here. So of all that we discussed this morning, I'm just going to leave you with one question. Due to the fact that there's some parallels between the days of Noah and today, are you living as a preacher of righteousness, as Noah did?